Hi, Caroline Stephen, financial journalist. Today's episode of Talking Trading is a rare opportunity to hear the entrepreneurial genius and the personal side to market legend Anthony Saliba. With business exits of over $100 million and ventures which took him all around the world, Anthony Saliba is probably one of the wealthiest people I've interviewed, as well as one of the nicest. His surname literally means crusader in Lebanese. And in today's interview, we find out how he lived up to his name. Last week, we heard about his famous options journey on the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade. Today, we hear his entrepreneurial brilliance and how it led him to have homes all at the same time in Sydney, Kuala Lumpur, Paris, Frankfurt, Madrid, and Chicago. I started asking Anthony about his childhood, how his father worked two jobs, and how it impacted him in adult life. I asked him some personal questions on his values, his ethics, his favourite sound, even his fitness regime. Today is a snapshot at the life and mind of a true entrepreneurial genius and a lovely guy, Anthony Saliba. But first, let's hear Louise Bedford in Mindpower on the three pathways that lead to affluence.
After I just left school, I remember going to a function held by a group who is ironically now out of business called Hudson's Research. They looked at getting wealthy and they showed during that evening how to get wealthy through shares, through property and through business. Sure, they're your three vehicles, they said, but where you specialise depends on your personality and what you're drawn to. There's not a lot that I remember from that night other than the fact that they said with property, remember if you run into trouble, you cannot sell off one room in your house to get yourself out of trouble. Whereas when it comes to the financial markets, you can sell a part of your holding, a part of your portfolio, if you will. That made so much sense to me. The way that my family handles this is that I earn the money through trading and eventually it filters through to my husband who does property development. So the two can go hand in hand. Have a look at your own situation. Where are you making your wealth from? If it's not business, property or shares, that means that you're tied to a job where you're working for somebody else's goals and dreams.
I'm Victor Sparandio, and I really enjoy talking trading.
Anthony Saliba has been an options trader for over 40 years. For his first 13 years, he was a market maker on the Chicago Board of Trade floor. He was the only options trader featured in Jack Schwager's Market Wizards. Since then, as we hear in today's interview, he has been a multifaceted, serial entrepreneur and option trading pioneer. He built the first options trading simulator and has launched trader education companies which have taken him to exchanges all around the world. Here is part two of Anthony the Crusader's interview. By the time you were 25, you'd earned $8 or $9 million back in the 80s. But you were born into poverty, weren't you? Your father was a carpenter and he'd come home with swollen hands and you're one of seven Yes. children and you had a very much hand-to-mouth existence. How much Yes. did your early years impact your adult life and money in the markets?
I feel bad now because I know real poverty because my wife and I do volunteer work and have spent a lot of time over the last 20 years with at-risk kids and both donating money, donating time. You know, I grew up in a wealthy Chicago suburb, but I was on the wrong side of the tracks where, you know, there were the haves and have-nots. And I would say, you know, we always had clothes. We always, you know, had food, but We didn't have anything like a lot of my friends had. And my dad worked two jobs. Like you said, he would come home at 5 o'clock in the evening in his dry coveralls. Do you say coveralls or overalls?
Overalls. Down
overalls.
Here.
So overalls have the sleeves, right? Or no, the overalls are the bibs, and the coveralls have the sleeves. So he would come in with his overalls from a carpenter, run downstairs, clean up, come upstairs with his overalls that he would go to the gas station, and they were greasy. And he would go and he would change oil and pump gas all night. So as a kid, I got to see him mostly when me and my next three brothers would go to the gas station on Sunday. My mom would drop us off and we'd sit on the bay and watch my dad pump gas and change oil. And he'd wave at us, say hi, whatever. And so, you know, for the older kids, I would say that the first 18 years of my life, I didn't spend a lot of time with my dad. But we started working early. We worked as little kids delivering papers, where my mom would actually drive us around and we'd hang those advertisers on the doors for 50 cents a week, which my mom would save, and started caddying. You know, I mean, I worked in the drugstore, started caddying at 12. I did a lot of jobs. Trading was my 27th job. I counted them once. Of all the different things I did, I was a photographer in college. I bartended. I delivered pizzas. And one time I had five jobs in college, and I didn't even go to class very often. But I wouldn't say I was in abject poverty. We didn't have much. And my parents, you know, it's amazing to have seven kids and do what they did. My dad was making like $18,000 a year gross with seven kids. Kind of tough. I couldn't imagine doing that today. But it did taught me the value of a dollar, I'll tell you that. You know, in terms of today, it's still with me, but also there's the thrill of seeing a plan come together. You know, my name, Saliba, is a Lebanese name. A sleeve is a crucifix, and a Saliba is a crusader of the cross. I only learned that when I was like 35. I spent the 90s overseas, and you know, besides my time in Sydney, I was in Kuala Lumpur and Hong Kong and Paris and Madrid and Milan. I had residence in Milan and Frankfurt and Chicago and Sydney all at the same time. Bopping around, I put 5 million miles on American Airlines from 89 to 98. You know, do the math on that. That's like circumnavigating the globe every week. But that work ethic was a combination of just growing up with a hard-driving mom who never said die. And she really instilled a great work ethic in all of us, I would say.
Once you found the rhythm of the markets on the floor, you've said that you were really good at sports at school and you did wrestling and cross-country running and that discipline is really strong in you. How much did discipline play a role in your market success?
Well, big time. I didn't say I was good at sports. I just was always in sports. Okay. I liked it a lot and I never gave up, but the one really good thing that I did was the half mile my sophomore year. I really was a decent half miler, but cross country, I was above average and loved it. It was a way to get away. It was a way to be, you know, with yourself. Think about it. This was before there was such a thing as a Walkman. You know, there was no music with you. You were out there with your own thoughts. There was a book written, The Loneliness of a Long Distance Runner, right? And they made a movie out of that. But basically, that was us. And then wrestling, I was over-disciplined. I'm the shortest in my family today because I basically over-disciplined myself while trying to cut weight. I didn't eat for a long time to make weight.
You look like a wrestler.
Yeah, well, I stunted my growth because I didn't eat very well when I was, you know, 16, 17 years old. I did that till I was a junior, and then I kind of discovered girls and stopped the sports. And
which is another something else I wanted to ask you, that you used to take trading on dates with you.
So back in 85, when I started trading currencies, there was a device about the same size of a cell phone today called the Quartrek. It had a radio signal, and you could get all of the interbank currency mark. So, yeah, I would take the Quartrek in my pocket on dates. Before that, I would take my trading cards, and I found all my – I saved everything. I saved all my trading cards from the 70s and 80s, and they were unique because I had like three clerks. One clerk handled my buys, one clerk handled all my sells, and then the most junior clerk would take down all the closing prices every night, and that's what I would do my basic homework on. I'd have my block of theoretical values. You know, girls, I'm sorry, I had to be disciplined to my first love, which was trading, and yeah, I cannot even talk about some of the times where I was working.
Just the final question on trading. What other traits are necessary to be successful in the markets, in Anthony the Crusader's opinion?
Well, markets change, and they're different today than they were last year. We went through a really crappy period for 6 or 7 years of quantitative easing, and I think that a lot of things didn't work. They're working again now because there's more uncertainty and volatility in the marketplace. But try a lot of different things and settle in on one or two or three that you like and then stick to them. So that level of discipline. Money management is huge. Everything that I did manually is now automated. Everything that we thought of is now available in a multitude of different flavors or styles online. So you can pretty much find whatever you might need as a trading tool that we didn't have. We had to, you know, write things down and think about things, but it still comes down to understanding what you're doing personally and not leaning on those tools. Case in point, in August of 2015, when the market totally went crazy, my brother Paul, my baby brother, he's 11 years younger, he's the head of risk management for Goldman Sachs for all of the derivatives products. And he's the man, you know. He called me up, I remember, because it was my anniversary in 2015. I took the day off. The market was going crazy, but I didn't care. And it was outside, beautiful day in August, and calls me up. He said, AJ, I had a line of 30-somethings out my door. They could have used your breakdown system because they didn't know how to deal with a volatile market that was going crazy because their systems weren't telling them what they needed to know on how to get out of their positions. And so that means that if you're using technology, it's kind of like getting into a car for the first time. And you pick the Bugatti Veyron, which is fastest car available, right? Well, it's one of the fastest. And you've never driven before. You just don't do that. And people say, well, don't worry about it. It's got this, that, and the other thing. But you need to know how to do it yourself. So learning a trade or learning a vocation is really what is important. And also, for newer traders, find a mentor, okay? Because if they did it, see, my dad, I learned a lot from my dad, and my dad's still with us, and he's awesome. But as a carpenter, I learned things that make so much sense, like measure twice, cut once, okay? Mm. Hit the right nail.
Very poignant.
Sure, you don't hit the thumbnail. Or he showed me how things worked. You know, I can fix things. So you might say, well, why do you care how to fix a doorknob or toilet flusher? Just call someone in. Well, the shit really hits the fan. It's good to know how to do it yourself. So same way with trading. Pick a vocation or pick a style and learn all about that and drill down and have it become part of you so that you're not just depending on the system. And that's so there's discipline, there's money management, there's learning to trade personally, and you can become a consistently profitable trader. I will just, as you say, we're leaving trading, I'll just say this. Large funds have been giving back their money over the last 3, 4, 5 years because they can't scale. Some are in alternatives, but the edge is just not there for large funds to get a decent return and scale their business. But there are millions of edges every day. It's like if you need to drink, you don't go to a fire hose, you go to a drinking fountain. So you can find these little edges, okay? They're democratized little pockets of profitability. And just like my, you know, quarter and a half, trying to take a little bit out of Boeing calendar spreads, those are there for people. And they add up. And you can, you know, do very, very well in the market, but it takes discipline and you should find a mentor to help you do it.
1988, you left the market floor and you started a trading education program.
Yes.
Why did you evolve into this?
When I die, they're going to put on my tombstone, necessity was the mother of invention. And I needed to find a way to stop training my clerks myself. And I was frustrated because I had a lot of traders on the floor at that time. I probably had like 27 traders on the floor in 88. And I had been pretty much the mentor to all of them, and I was getting tired of it. And I said, somebody's got to find a multimedia combination of computer inventory of questions and video so that we can do this just once and then screen these clerks and test them, get it standardized, rock and roll. So I set out to find somebody to build this thing for me, and I found a group of guys that did gaming. Those games were kids, when their moms were in the grocery store, they had those like machines on the sidewalk. They would sit in and they'd shoot like Space Invaders or something. And there was these guys that wrote those kind of software. And I said, okay, that's a good place to start. Let's build a simulator. I went up to Northbrook, which is a 45 to 75 minute ride. You know, I had a limo pick me up, did my homework in the car, spent 3 hours from 5 to 8 training these ostensibly older guys. I mean, I was 33 and they were probably in their mid to late 40s about options, how to do options. And after I got them to a certain level, then I started to teach them how I wanted the code to be and what I wanted the game to be like. And we got Dragon voice recognition. This is 1988. And we figured out that you could trade with only 40 words. The number system, the increments of eighths and quarters, and then the 12 months, buy and sell, and a couple colloquial slang terms like you got them or done or, you know, things that we used. And you would train your voice in a staccato sense. And then when we built this thing, you interacted with a bunch of players. I created actors that emulated different trading styles that were in vogue at the time. Theoretical traders, those guys in Boeing, backspreaders, and I built those persona into the system so that people could trade against them, but we kept track of everything everybody did. I had to start that company as a training company because it took twice as long and twice as much money to do it for myself than these guys told me it would. And I said, well, this is harder than I thought. Other people must need it. And that's what got me to Germany, because they were talking about launching DTB at the time, Deutsche Terminbörse, which they changed the name to Eurex, and we trained everybody in Germany, and then the Germans told the Austrians, and we trained everybody in Austria, and then we went to Spain. I lived in Madrid in 1992 and trained everybody in Madrid, and even did more for Madrid than we did for Sydney. Then I lived in Milan in 94 and early 95 and trained all the banks in Milan. We did over 7,000, mostly men, but men and women, how to trade options.
And you're now going into China?
Into China. We've done a number of classes into China. The simulator is way better than then, of course. It's not voice activated. We have AI. We have bots in there. The bots learn from your behavior. It's really fun. It's when I built it in 88 and early 89, I was mesmerized. I would spend a lot of time myself trying to cheat the system, push the system, outwit the system, rack up P&L.
So this is your lifeblood. This is what drives you.
Yeah, I think I'm a builder. You know, I think I like to build companies. I'm in the process. You know, we just launched a cryptocurrency OTC desk. We've got some tools for Bitcoin traders. And my main core business is fintech, where we deliver state-of-the-art trading technology for, you know, buy-side people, retail and professional. And that's one of the things that keeps me energized also.
Your wife, Moira, Magda's mom,
yes,
says that you have too many ideas and too many thoughts running around in your head, AJ. How have you compounded the fortune you have today with all these parallel businesses?
Well, I just don't know how to operate any differently, but I just dream a lot and think that there's, you know, anything's capable. And I have to say that it's because of the team I'm with. I'm with a group of guys. There's 14 of us now. We've been together, time frame is 15 years. But my partner Jordan and I have been working together since 97. Okay, and he's my CTO. He builds all the technology, or leads the technology crew. And Joe Corona, I've actually been working with Joe for 30 years. And why I say that is that we're energized to be together and work together. We have each other's back. But more importantly, I have so much confidence in them that when I have this idea or have an idea, I have all the confidence in the world that they can put it into software. And that's magical. They'll also tell me if they can't, but that lends to a very a difficult time to say no. It's really hard to say no. I mean, we're working on delivery systems for oil. We're working on delivery systems for the U.S. government auction process. We're working on a system to automate and e-verify drug prescriptions, opiate space on the blockchain. So our system is extensible and flexible that, you know, we're into not only fintech, not only the cryptos, but also those fields and a couple others that, and still being formulated. We had a 9-figure exit Liquid Point. We've had a couple other large exits and other companies, and now we're back together doing Matrix and building you know, another great solution. So keeps you thinking, you know.
Anthony the Crusader.
Stop it.
Now that you've earned more money than you would have dreamed of as a child, how do you encourage other entrepreneurs and traders to think about wealth?
Well, it's a great question because, first of all, we don't know how long we'll be here. And, you know, with the age of singularity coming upon us, you know, my doctor says that I'll live to 110. The fact that I might be around for another 50 years and I feel just as good as I did in my 20s and I'm active, you know, I do yoga every day and I cardio and everything. So I'm like to other people who have already had one success, you know, why stop? to those who haven't had their first success yet, one of the things that's a hallmark of true entrepreneurs is, you know, we never say die. You know, we don't stop. Now, the problem is, you know, not every one of my ideas have been home runs. Some I've struck out. I got into construction business in the 80s, got in with the wrong partner. I'm very upset about this, and I hope my wife, you know, doesn't listen to this or watch this. But I got into the smart home business in 2002, and I got in with the wrong – I had her brother-in-law run it, and he ran it in the ground. It was a great idea. But, you know, you look at Nest and other products that are out today, we were way ahead of that. Home automation, they had a great name. It was called Smart Home Chicago, like Sweet Home Chicago. But ran through a lot of money and just gave up on that. So it's not like every idea is going to be a winner.
Okay. Quick question. How do you set your goals?
I'm at a point now where I'm doing most of my goal setting literally in spreadsheet templates that I've set up, you know, do my what ifs and sort of dream big and see if that's doable and fill in the middle. But I probably could use some help in not setting too many goals, because I've got some of my staff, you know, having a hard time keeping up. I look at little goals, medium sized goals, and then the ultimate goal. So they're, you know, components of the larger goal. I put it in this model that I have, and I say, I think that's doable. Here's what I need.
With your gorgeous daughter, Magda, doing her homework next to you, do you feel like a success now? How do you measure your success?
It's a good question. I've had successes and I've had failures. You know, I mean, I think that depending on who you speak to and what the measure is, I mean, I've tried to be a good person. I've tried to help others. I've tried to give as much as I can. And I've also, you know, tried to treat my staff like I'd like to be treated.
It's a big one.
It's, you know, that's important. And I think the testimony is that a lot of people come back, you know, and work for me over and over. I'm not easy, but I'm fair, and I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't ask anybody to do something that I wouldn't be willing to do myself. And quite often I do it. I'm not an ivory tower guy. I'm all about having a plan come together and have fun doing it.
So look, here's really short 10 personal questions for AJ.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. You up for them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
AJ, what is the best piece of advice anyone has ever given you?
Oh my God, the best piece of advice that anybody ever gave me was trust your gut.
What moment or event in childhood shaped who you are now? Moments or events?
Yeah, playing softball with the kids who were the doctors and lawyers' sons and being treated as one of them, even though they went back to their mansions and I went back to our, you know, 2-bedroom house for 9 people, realizing, you know, that and caddying was huge. I got to say, you know, I was an Evans Scholar and I learned a lot on the golf course.
What did your parents and 6 siblings give you?
Well, my parents gave me my work ethic to show me to never quit and that hard work pays off. My siblings kept me in check, as we all did. The 4 boys were, you know, within less than 4 years, were very competitive. The younger ones, some balance, because I had to take care of them. My mom worked. So it was kind of a well-roundedness, but and a competitiveness.
What do you value most in a person? What quality?
Their loyalty is most important. right there with that is honesty and their sweat, their ability to work hard. It doesn't have to be right. It just, you got to keep trying. And if you're not clocking in and trying, you're not carrying your weight.
What quality do you dislike most in people?
Timidness, false sense of propriety, or entitlement. I think everybody's equal, and you should be judged on how you deliver your role as part of a team.
What's your favorite sound?
The flute. Anything that comes out of a flute.
What's your favorite place in the world?
My favorite place in the world, well, I mean, depends on the mood, but I love Hong Kong. I loved Sydney, but I would say Italy. Tuscany is probably my favorite place in the world. Yet I've lived in this house for 37 years, and so in this quadrant, I spent the most time.
What's your favorite quote?
That government is best which governs least.
What's your favorite book?
Whoa. My favorite book right now is Homo Deus, A Brief History of the Future by Harari and Yuval Harari. Probably the book I would recommend to everybody is Younger Next Year. There's a female version and a male version. Changed my life.
AJ, what advice would you give to your 14-year-old self in that two-bedroom house?
Get your teeth fixed. My mom wanted me to get my teeth fixed, and I, you know, it was very expensive, and I didn't want to spend the money, so I didn't do it. And now, almost 50 years later, I regret that because I should probably get. Yeah, I've got pretty crooked, crowded teeth.
I didn't notice your teeth.
I know, but I bite my cheeks a lot, and something my dentist says I got to do now. So that's my. But in terms of business, I would say follow your heart. You know, do what you think you want to do. Don't do something that you just feel you're passionate about or like, you know, because that would have been trying to be a baseball player. But I asked some dumb questions back then, like who makes the most money, or because I figured I could be like anybody, but I knew I wasn't going to be a professional baseball player. So
you have a quality with all your ventures and all your wealth and all your prestige and all your experience. You're very easy to talk to. You feel very approachable and humble.
Well, thank you. It could be all taken away in a heartbeat. I mean, probably my biggest fault is that I don't spend enough time just relaxing. You know, my wife's pretty active doing volunteer work. My daughter's very active in her life. We have a beautiful little dog, and my son's in college. So I have a lot of time to create, and maybe I should spend more time just chilling out, but I don't. You know, I take a sauna every night for about 2 hours, and that's my I drink about a gallon and a half of water and think and read and catch up on email and stuff. That's my only time alone. But other than that, I'm not really slowing down much.
Anthony the Crusader, I don't think the world wants you to slow down.
well, believe me, I don't have any plans to. I do not believe in retirement. I think that is a myth, a government-perpetrated myth. I think everybody should do whatever they want. And if playing golf every day is what you want to do, that's awesome. But just to retire for the sake of retiring is silly. If you like what you're doing and you're building and you're creating, then you should keep doing it. And I would imagine your listeners and viewers and readers are those that create either on their own or with a team. So I don't see slowing down.
Anthony Saliba, there are so many places in Bitcoin and fintech that we could go, but it is not the place in this interview. Thank you so much for taking time on Chicago Sunday night time with Magda sitting next to you. Thank you for coming on to Talking Trading.
Thanks, Caroline. It's been great, great time, great meeting you.
You've been listening to TalkingTrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any of the information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.